This is episode 350 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, September the 19th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, in your backyard, and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. With much leaking and speculation, Microsoft released a pre-beta version of its new operating system, Windows 8, to developers last week. At first glance, Windows 8 is the convergence of mobile and desktop computing, with a one OS fits all approach from the world's dominant software provider. Despite the 64-bit version refusing to load up on two different workstations in the TechTalk offices, the new system boots up in seconds and features a homepage filled with colourful tiles taking users directly into applications such as Facebook messaging or news feeds. First, Apple abandoned power-guzzling Flash iOS for HTML5. Now, Microsoft looks set to continue the trend, building Windows 8 and Internet Explorer 10 without support for Adobe's media player, at least in the metro mode. Its main competition is Windows 7, which is not all that old in its life cycle. Windows 8 is less likely to appeal to business users, given that many companies are still working their way towards switching to Windows 7. Microsoft has sold almost 450 million Windows 7 licenses in 2 years since it was first introduced. But the newest version still accounts for less than one-third of the global Windows users, many of whom are clinging to older versions. Windows 8 is the first to become compatible with low-power chips designed by ARM Holdings, which have become the standard for mobile devices. Windows unit chief Steve Sinofsky said the new operating system is the first to focus on applications. It will contain an online app store for the first time, reflecting the way people now use computers, tablets, and smartphones. He said tablets running Windows 8 will be able to connect easily to printers, cameras, and other devices. Windows 8 will also work on PCs with regular mouse and keyboard commands. Those in the know believe that Microsoft wants to get Windows 8 devices in stores around July next year, or the US holiday season at the latest. Microsoft itself has not set a schedule publicly for the release of Windows 8.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Microsoft opens the curtains on their newest operating system, Windows 8. Optus opens up Pandora's box with its new cloud-based time-shifting media service. The Android bot army grows, but PCs still win by a mile. And is this the beginning of the end for RIM, as the BlackBerry's days seemed well and truly numbered? First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra and Optus at loggerheads over football rights. Microsoft releases a developer preview of Windows 8. A new director is appointed to the board of NBN Co. And Australians are now the biggest users of social media in the developed world. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra and Optus are embroiled in a dispute over online broadcast rights to the AFL and NRL football. Telstra says its deal with the AFL, worth $153 million over the next 4 years, could be in jeopardy if Optus is allowed to continue to stream coverage to its internet and mobile phone subscribers. The Optus TV Now service, launched on the 19th of July, works like an internet TV recorder and allows Optus subscribers to watch AFL games broadcast on the 7 or 10 networks after a short delay. Optus last week commenced proceedings in the federal court to restrain the AFL and NRL from suing it for breach of copyright. Ms. Marianne Reed is the chief executive of the Australian Copyright Council. Ms. Reed spoke on ABC Radio last week and said the federal court's decision decision would have far-reaching implications.
First of all, it involves new technologies, in particular the cloud storage systems, which have emerged recently and are now going to be seeing a lot more of them. It also involves a set of laws that probably didn't contemplate these types of services, and it involves a number of corporations which are looking at ways to make money out of the new online environment. So all those things have come together to create the situation that we see here.
The Telstra online content contract is part of a deal worth $1.25 billion over 5 years for rights to rebroadcast AFL games. The long-awaited Windows 8 has been made available by Microsoft, albeit as a developer preview version. Windows 8 is Microsoft's combined desktop, laptop, and tablet operating system, intended for installation on any device from 10-inch touch tablets and notebook computers to conventional PC desktops. The new operating system features the so-called Metro-style touch interface of Live Tiles, which Microsoft first released with its Windows Phone 7 operating system. The Metro programming model can be used by developers for building web applications, as well as native applications that can run full screen on any supported device. Consumers can also opt to use the traditional Windows desktop, complete with the Aero interface introduced in Windows 7. In June, Microsoft Corporate Vice President Mr. Daniel Lewin said the official release of Windows 8 was probably still 12 months away. The Windows pre-beta is available for download from Microsoft's website at msdn.microsoft.com. A new director has been appointed to the board of NBN Co. Mr. Rick Toccini, a qualified civil engineer with more than 40 years' experience in the construction industry, was appointed to the board by the Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator Stephen Conroy, last week. Senator Conroy said that Mr. Turcini's construction experience, coupled with his management experience overseeing large infrastructure projects, will enhance the already strong skill set of the NBN Co. board. Meanwhile, in other NBN news, the fifth and final mainland first release site in Willunga, South Australia, was commissioned last week. Willunga is 47 kilometres south of Adelaide and the first location in South Australia to be connected to the national broadband network. Willunga is also the last of five initial locations to be connected on the mainland. IT Wire reported that Willunga has been the only site where 100% of underground infrastructure had to be built from scratch, rather than being able to make use of existing underground or overhead infrastructure. 940 premises in Willunga are covered by the network, with 91% of premises consenting to an NBN connection. And a new survey by media research experts Nielsen has revealed that Australians use social media more than any other developed country. Nielsen found Australian internet users spend an average of 7 hours and 17 minutes on social media each month, which is more than users in any of the 9 other national markets surveyed. Nielsen's social media report, Q3 2011, covers blogs as well as social networks like Facebook and Twitter. Other countries surveyed include Brazil, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Spain, Switzerland, the United States, and the United Kingdom. The findings are of no surprise to workplace relations personnel who say that social media is noticeably encroaching on employee productivity. Mr. Chris James from the Victorian Employers Chamber of Commerce and Industry on ABC Radio last week.
We've had issues of people in the construction industry and in manufacturing taking long breaks in the toilet, and what we're finding is people are texting and using social media programs in the toilet. They're not actually going to the toilet for the purpose for which it was designed. I think overall most employers, though, according to our surveys anyway, do accept that inevitably some of the day employees will be using social media.
While Facebook and Twitter are ranked highly amongst Australians, the social media savvy in other countries spend large amounts of time on Orkut, Blogger and Tumblr. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, I saw a film which I was a tad disappointed in.
118 minutes.
Yeah, that's a long time for a film that drags a bit.
Andy B in the chat room asks an interesting question.
There's a reason I've got 8 gig of memory in this laptop.
Can I just say,
all my text messages.
I don't read that out. We'll be off the air in a fraction of a moment.
Looks like something Lady Gaga would wear.
Oh dear.
People shopping for a new phone are confused, stressed, frustrated, and suffering from information overload.
I don't think I'll be able to make it tonight. Deadline tomorrow.
tomorrow, and I lost a whole day's work today.
Does the Apple world not have autosave?
Well, I don't know.
Apparently not.
That would be a benchmark.
It would. Mr. Harvey, Jerry Harvey, this is the bit of the show you need to listen to.
The biggest problem we have is when the drives go to sleep and you have to wait for a drive to spin up.
That's a lot of episodes.
It is. Should we go home now?
It's a ludicrous amount of episodes.
How many do we have to do before we've served our sentence?
A lot of pizzas.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, and we have a panel of people sitting in front of us. I was trying to think of the collective noun, but no, we'll just stick with something safe this evening.
Do.
People's good.
A panel of panelists.
Are they ordinary people or are they special people? Anyway, we'll find out later. To my left, sitting across diagonally, is the person who was not part of the Nielsen poll that you just heard about. Otherwise, the social networking stats would have gone through the roof, and it wouldn't have just been Australians spending 7.5 minutes a week online. Lena Van Deventer is back.
Hello.
She's solved her saving problems, Apple S or whatever you do on a Mac.
I have a grievance to air.
Here we go. Okay, boys, I'll just pull the music down. Ready?
You said mean things.
Go. Reset.
On the radio.
Go.
You said mean
now.
Things about me on the radio, and I think you should say sorry.
We said factually correct things.
No.
I said factually correct things on the radio.
Graham
I
didn't.
Read out the SMS
Hang
that
on a minute.
You sent me.
He's an expert at avoiding litigation.
He
so
is. Yeah, I will litigate.
If you have a grievance with any other panel members, now is the opportune time to actually grieve them on the radio.
Well, I heard my name mentioned.
Graham,
yes.
You don't know how to use Twitter. Because you said I tweeted 16 times in 10 minutes, and that was not true. That was all of your feed. 16 updates came up, and you blamed them all on me. So
I just said that there was a thing there. I didn't I didn't interpret. You interpreted.
Oh, that's a very weasel word way to get out of it, that one.
Have you
been in politics? I didn't even know. This whole time. We're calling him the Rob Oakeshott of Tech Talk Radio, but maybe there is truth to that. No,
maybe.
It's fine.
Maybe.
It's fine.
I'm sorry,
I'll forgive
Lena.
You. I'll forgive
you're
you.
You're right. I don't know how to use Twitter.
It serves me right for not being here to defend myself.
Correct.
That's rule number one on this radio show.
Yep.
Dr. Ron's here. Hello, Dr. Ron.
Hello. How are you going?
Good to get a word in edgewise.
The meat between, I don't know, the rock between a rock and a hard place or the meat in the sandwich? He's sitting between the two of the sparring panellists.
I am. Keep them apart tonight. There's a lot of angst, a lot of upset in the air, isn't there?
Is there? Oh, I was about to be hit over the head with a MacBook as someone walked in the door this evening.
She nearly hit you too.
I know. She wanted to. You could tell the look in the eyes.
Internet Explorer cannot display the web page.
Uh-oh.
Graham is using Windows 8 down on the end. We've tweeted pictures of it. And, anyway, we'll talk about that shortly. But, Dr. Ron, have you got any coro that needs to be spoken about?
Of course. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is where to send it.
We should say hello to some new stations, too, before we get into it.
We should. Phoenix FM in Bendigo. Hello to all the new listeners there on Wednesday night. And you're listening to Talk Radio from 10 p.m.
There's a suburb in Bendigo.
I don't know whether it's a suburb. Suburbs of Bendigo.
It's just a big town. It's a province south of Bendigo, which I've often quite wondered how they've named it. And it's Kangaroo Flat. Did someone run over a kangaroo on the Calder coming into Bendigo at one stage? Is that how it got its name?
Andrew, ooh. Have you spent any time in this part of the world?
Yeah.
Have you just looked around at the horizon?
Yeah, you can see for miles.
Yeah, flat.
Okay. But it's not there. I've driven through there. It's not flat.
They must have a low crime rate then. Because if you get mugged, you can see them coming from a mile off.
Okay.
And hello to everyone in Launceston on Saturday afternoon. You're
what
listening
did you say?
To us. Launceston.
Launceston, yes.
Way FM.
Way FM.
Yeah.
No way.
Go
way.
Hawks.
Way FM. Go Hawks.
Yeah, go Hawks. Club at Sydney on the weekend. What are they going to do to the Maggies? Anyway, that's not this type of show. We'll get into trouble.
Mountain Wombat on the Tech Talk Radio forum says, I use an old Jabra BT620 Bluetooth headset with my iPhone, but it's on the way out. The battery's dying. I need to update, but would like the same features on the new set. The old one has last number redial, active voice command, as well as the usual answer and play pause music buttons. Has anyone else played with Bluetooth headsets, or am I the last geek standing? Any recommendations or places to go to see reviews of headsets available in Oz? Cheers, Mountain Wombat. Mm. On the forum, he posted that. Which is at forum.techtalkradio.com.au. Graham, you use Bluetooth headsets.
Yeah, but not for playing audio. He's obviously using it for his music playing as well, because he's got his play pause button and all that
sort
of stuff.
Yes, and he talks about it with his connecting to his iPhone.
Yeah, so he's obviously using it for his phone calls and for his
music.
iPod.
Music, yeah. So I'm not so familiar with that. The Bluetooth headset I've got for that is a Blue Ant one that I bought years and years ago, which is it's one of these ones that goes over both ears and wraps around the back of your head.
Right.
And that does both the phone and the stereo type connections and has all the keys on it. But that was years ago I got that.
Now, I have a Blue Ant Bluetooth hands-free as well, which I use in the car, and that's got magnets on it, and it sticks to a little clip on my sun visor.
Mm.
But again, okay, that's just for the telephone. It's not for music. Yeah. Andrew, do you listen to music via Bluetooth?
No.
No? Lena?
No, I can't say I do.
Mountain, we can't help you.
Sorry.
B, Trigwell.
Someone will. Someone will send us some info in or post on the forum.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
Isn't there a special standard for Bluetooth audio?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, so it must be all right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I've just never listened to it.
Or really bad that it needs a standard.
Well, yeah.
Depending on which way you look at it. It works really well.
Whichever way you want to look at it.
Works really well.
Yeah.
Hmm. And B. Trigwell, via the contact form, says, I was just wondering what your experience with OS X Lion is like, because I downloaded it recently, and it can frustrate me sometimes with some of the features, but I'm hoping you guys have any advice for using Lion. Show's great. Keep it. Keep it? Keep it up? That's right. Bearing with you, Mr. Trigwell or Ms. Trigwell. OS X Lion.
Don't look at me in that tone of voice.
I haven't upgraded yet. I haven't put Lion on my MacBook Pro.
I was about to ask what you're using here. The MacBook Pro, Lena.
Yes.
And what's that running at the moment?
The one before. 10.6.
About to smash. She just clicked help about on a computer.
10.6.7.
Can't do that on a PC.
Which kiddie's that one?
This would be not Snow
She's
Leopard.
She's a Macca.
Not Snow Leopard, the next one. The one between Snow Leopard and Lion, I think.
Okay, good. Glad we sorted that out.
I can't remember which one. No, I haven't updated to Lion yet because my husband did, and he's having a lot of troubles with kernel panics and things, so it sort of scared me off.
Andy B in the chat called it Apple witchcraft.
Yeah.
But your husband also did a upgrade install rather than doing a clean install. Yeah. So.
Well, what's the difference?
He should know better.
Come on, tell everyone what the difference is.
Well, an upgrade install modifies your existing system to run the new operating system and keeps your programs installed and everything intact. Whereas a clean install is what you'd do on as if you just bought a new machine and you install the operating system on it without regard for what was already there. So you wipe away what's already there and install it on as a new machine.
And a clean install is traditionally the best, most safest,
yep,
beneficial way of doing things.
Yep, in both Windows World and Mac World.
We have new listeners in Bendigo and Launceston, and we need to explain these things because, you know, they're probably going, what on earth are we listening to here?
No, I need to repartition. I've got two hard drives in my MacBook Pro, so I boot Windows up as well. So I've got my Windows hard drive and my OS, my Mac one.
You're a boot
camper. I need to put more gigs in my Mac side, so I have to repartition. So I'm just going to wait and repartition and upgrade clean install at the same time.
Okay.
But I just haven't got around to it yet. But from what I've heard from a lot of my friends who've upgraded around to it.
It's green.
Yeah, they're green, aren't they? Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah.
just if, like, the scrolling's all changed and there are a lot of changes between, I think, Tiger and Lion. So it's a matter of just keeping on until you get used to it, I think, because the scrolling goes in a different direction and there's a few other gestures.
Grant says it's Tiger. Is it Tiger?
I think it is Tiger, yes.
There you go.
Mm. But, yeah, so just keep on keeping on and you'll get there. You'll get used to it.
Andy B, who's in our chat room, says via the feedback form, hi guys, I had an interesting experience with Belkin in the last few weeks after dealing with a faulty router. And Belkin is a manufacturer of routers,
wireless
and switches,
routers and
networking equipment.
They make the Bob as well.
For those, obviously, people are new to the show, we have a chat, which is what we're referring to at the moment, which is an online chat. When we go to air on the Monday nights, and you're probably not listening to us on the Monday nights, you can come along and contribute and chirp in and become part of the show, which is chat.techtalkradio.com.au. So if you're hearing us talk about the chat, that's what we're talking about.
Yep. And if it's Monday night where you are, if it's Monday night, on the east coast of Australia, just after 8 o'clock, then come and join us in the chat.
Yeah, there's people in the chat, all sorts of people. Andy B's one, there's your fourth mention, and other people chipping in with all sorts of good bits of information.
Yeah.
Check better be in the mail, Andy, that's all I can say. Having purchased it back in May, after about a month, I noticed that the reliability of my ADSL service fluctuated. lots of dropped packets, unable to stream video, web pages refusing to load, Windows startup noises, and so on. Swapping out with another modem produced the same sorts of problems, so I suspected it to be a line fault. After that, I dealt with internode support for a good few months. After exhausting every possible troubleshooting step, it was determined that both routers were faulty and the line was within standards. Fair enough. Next step, request a replacement from Belkin. What a drama that turned out to be. Now, Andy's detailed here about the trials and tribulations of the Belkin support line. After an hour of pointless troubleshooting and changing settings, I just hung up. And
that's what they want you to do.
Yeah, that's what they want you to do, Andy. I think a week went by, no replacement, no email. I sent a strongly worded email, which garnered a response that it should turn up tomorrow. Overall, it's pretty poor form by Belkin, says Andy. 3 weeks from initial contact to replacement. I realise that they can't be handing out replacements willy-nilly, but given that troubleshooting steps as prescribed by their website have already been followed, it's pointless to make the customer go through all of those again by phone, and then again via email. Based on this experience, my next router purchase will be a brand other than Belkin. Cheers, Andy B.
Oh, be careful when you ring the phone company. They want you to unplug your fax.
Yeah, if you unplug the fax machine.
Yeah, do all those sort of self-tests too.
Do you have ADSL filters?
Yeah. Have you got one filter? How many filters? Yeah. Bad luck.
You'd be surprised how many people do get the filter thing wrong, though. They just can't
wrong way?
Yeah.
They filter out the ADSL signal to the...
Exactly. They put the filter on the ADSL modem and, yeah.
And so they're wondering why they've got this funny, crackly, high-pitched pitch noise in their ears on the phone.
Mm. Belkin make the Bob as well for iNet.
They do, yes.
Do they?
The Bob product is made by Belkin.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't like at the moment.
That's you've got a
story.
Bob.
I do.
You're onto your second Bob too, aren't you?
Yep.
You go through Bobs like they're going out of fashion.
I'm about to churn again.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I'm out. Out.
Should I ask or is...
It's just... No, it's a whole nother...
Okay. That can be the car park show we do when we leave tonight. We can find out about that.
Yep.
I told you she was angry tonight.
I am.
Yeah, we should take... We've got the mini disc. We'll take the mini disc out into the car park and we'll do a car park podcast.
No, we'll get sued.
Okay.
GJMCN via the feedback form says, I agree that solar is good, nuclear being not good. And here is another string to the bow. The recent 3-state power outages in the United States during a record heat wave weakens the base load power argument. Better you have your own power than no power at all at home. I can't
quite see how it weakens the base load power argument.
I can't find the article in New Scientist where solar wind at home is used to produce hydrogen so that we aren't so dependent on the sun shining or the wind blowing. But what I did find is a lot of writing about the huge savings in the US and the UK just from increasing the energy efficiency of our homes. Graham, you mentioned this a few weeks ago. If you just look at, for example, changing the seals on your refrigerators,
yep,
has an enormous impact on your.
I took it a step further, Dr. Ron.
Home. Yeah, I know you do. I know what happens in your house.
What have you done now, Andrew?
I just replaced the refrigerator. It's cheaper than replacing the seals.
Wow.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, Dr. Ron was talking about last week. The Australian Postman brought it.
Oh, right. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
He ordered a fridge in
the... ordered a fridge online.
Online.
Yeah.
Poor Postie on his push. Oh,
I think my comment from last time stands. You idiot.
Shout him a massage. That poor Postie.
Now, in regard to all this...
All this comment from GJ.
All this comment from a number of people about power.
Yes.
Okay. Common sense, please, people. This is... I know that nuclear power feels bad and scary and horrible, but it's the best of the alternatives for some things, but not for everything. There's a place in the system for solar, there's a place in the system for wind, there's a place in the system for all kinds of different things. You don't have to pick one solution. What we do have to do is stop digging up coal and burning that. That's just crazy.
Isn't solar power technically nuclear power anyway?
Yes.
Aha!
If you want to split atoms, yes.
But you could say that for the coal as well, if you want to run that argument, because where did the energy... Andrew's thinking about this. Now, think about it.
Is that what that smell was?
Where did the energy come from to generate turning. The coal in the first place?
You've got to think the sun's only hydrogen and... what are the two top gases? Hydrogen and helium?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you need helium a sun which is a lot more stronger than ours to generate elements from further down the periodic table, such as oxygen and things like that. They need to be about 6 times as hotter as our sun, so you're not going to get much carbon out of
that. We are all made of the remnants of supernovas. You're absolutely right.
Star stuff.
I wasn't even thinking that far back. I was just thinking as far back as the prehistoric era, because the energy that combined the basic elements into the trees that then fell over into the swamp and became the carbon and also became the coal and the other What am I trying to say? Oil.
There's lots of ums here tonight, oil, isn't it?
Yep. Yep. that energy came from the sun. It's sunlight that powers the trees that create the.
Are you going to talk about photosynthesis in a minute?
No.
The trees that burned down, fell over, then sank into the swamp.
That's correct, and became the coal. So yes, by Lena's argument, yes, everything is solar power. The entire Earth is solar powered. But yes, we can't keep digging up fossil fuels to
run out. Surely.
Less an argument, more a facetious comment. But yes.
No,
this is Tech Talk Radio, despite vicious rumours of the contrary. Dr. Ron, have you got any...
This is technology, Andrew. This is vital technology for the future.
Agree.
Yes.
GJ, your comments will always generate heated debate and discussion, and that's a good thing. GJ's also put some links there, which we'll put in the show notes. And last but certainly not least... regular and valued contributor, GD, who's the mod in the chat room tonight, of this week's episode. On the forum, he says, there's a push for the GST to be imposed on purchases of $1,000 and below when using the internet.
Ah.
I thought it was timely that a list of price comparison websites was started. Now, GD started a great list on the forum, and regular contributor TARDIS3 has also put his... 0.1 euros worth in as well. It's in the how-tos and free advice. No, in the how-tos and free advice section of the forum. So if you're interested, have a look at the great list there that's been started by GD.
I've made a purchase online in excess of $1,000.
Was it a fridge?
No, smaller.
Okay.
And I'd be very interested to see if I get a little bill from Mr. Customs. Mr. Are they the people that do that?
Yep.
Are they the ones that send the bills?
Yep.
Saying we'd like a bit of GST, please. Be interesting to see what happens there. Or do you think it'll just come through and the courier rock up and go, here you go, buddy, sign here, and that's the end of it?
Was it purchased from overseas?
Yes. Yes, it was.
So what's the rule now? Is the $1,000 rule is something they're proposing, not something that's in at the moment, is that right?
That's what they're proposing.
Yeah.
Under sub $1,000? No, I didn't. I think, yes.
No, it's already.
I thought that over $1,000 was in now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Already a thing. Has been for a few years.
Because you were talking about sub $1,000, weren't you there, Dr. Ron?
Correct.
Oh, okay. Yep. Now I understand. So anything over 1,000 now. So what you probably should have declared it. You probably should have...
Well, it's not for me to declare. I just bought it.
And yeah,
the people
that's right.
Have sold but the people it, who send it should declare it.
But they're not going to be collecting GST on behalf of the Australian government, are they?
No.
No, you're the Australian part of the... you caused the thing to be imported.
So well, I've got to put my hand up and say, excuse me, Mr. Swan.
Can I pay some GST, please?
Yes.
Yeah, no.
No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Nope.
That's why correspondence, Andrew. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk a little bit about things that have happened during the course of the week. The main thing which Graham's been playing with tonight, Windows 8. What do you reckon, Graham? I've tried my X64 version twice on two different machines and I can't get it to install, but you've had more success judging by the pics that are out there at the moment on Twitter of your device.
Oh, yes, I've got it to install. It did take a couple of tries. The first couple of times I downloaded it, the download was corrupt. So my first question to you, have you run a check using the SHA1 sum to make sure that the download is valid?
No, I haven't.
They provided the SH1 check sum beside the thing to make sure you can do that. It's a calculation performed on the entire file that results in a manageable size number that you can use to compare with the file you've downloaded, and if the number they give and the number that you calculate from the file you've actually downloaded match, then you know your download is good.
So how do I do this calculation? Because I've seen this on a lot of websites where you download material.
Yep.
Especially the bigger download sites where you're downloading gigabytes.
Yep.
They send these things. And trusted sites like Microsoft's and Adobe's. I don't know about Apple because I don't let download from there.
Depends on how you download it.
So how do I do the check?
There are a number of ways to do the check. There's a tool you can get from Microsoft to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That you just download and install on your machine and you run a command line and it gives you the number and then you compare the number to what's on the website. I used a download manager and my download manager has the ability to check it for me. So all I did was copy and paste the number off the website into the download manager, into a special place.
Now, is this in Google? Google's Chrome, where this download manager is?
No, using a different download manager called Free Download Manager, which is a open source GPL download manager.
Open source, GPL. See? What's general purpose licensing? means you can use it for free as long as you don't resell it.
Doesn't mean general purpose license. It's the free license that's free, not only in the sense of freedom, but also usually in the sense of free $0. Don't have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a license that allows you to have confidence and control in the things you download.
Okay.
It's the same license that's used for the Linux operating system and for other things like that.
All right. So if I download, I'll check my checksum and get back to you next week and let you know what it is. I downloaded the 32-bit version, but I haven't tried that yet.
Okay.
How large is the download, Graham?
Very large.
It's about anywhere between 3.5 to 6 gig, depending on which version you get.
Yeah, the 64-bit version with the developer tools installed is around about 5 gig. Yeah. And it's too big to fit on a single layer DVD. You need, if you're going to burn it to a DVD disc, you need a dual layer DVD disc.
Ooh, and these come down as ISOs, which is one file,
yep,
which you plug into your DVD burner of choice, and normally it'll be able to go make an image disc, and you plug the ISO into it, and it burns it out as if it's something you bought off the shelf with all those individual files on it.
Or the better way to do it, if you haven't got a spare whole computer that's big enough to run Windows 8, then the better way to do it is to use a virtualization software to run a virtual machine and install it into that, in which case you don't even need to burn it onto a DVD. You can just have the virtual machine attached to the ISO file and pretend it's a DVD, which is what I did.
Sounds like Tron.
Now, Graham, I haven't downloaded or installed Windows 8 yet, but I'm interested to know how functional it is, because it's not a beta, it's like a preview, isn't it?
It's certainly not up to beta standard yet.
Right.
It's a long way from being ready for release. It's our first look at the new interface that Microsoft are calling Metro, which is what you've heard, or some listeners would have heard me complain on the show about making your Windows full-size desktop or laptop computer look like a mobile phone.
Yes.
It's just got big blocky icons. It's designed to be used by touch. It's designed to be used by
visually challenged people
poking fingers at it. Yep.
So it's like that tile interface that we saw on Windows
like
Phone 7.
Like you say on Windows Phone 7, that's right.
But you can choose between that and the traditional icon-based menu.
Yes and no.
Oh, really?
You can go back to the desktop and you can get a desktop that looks like your desktop and...
like a Windows 7 one.
Like the Windows 7 desktop. But if you click where the Windows 7 start menu is, it doesn't give you the Windows 7 start menu. It just flips you back to Metro.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Defeats the purpose a little bit. But as you say, it's just pre-beta.
Yeah, that's right. So I believe there are ways to make it display the Windows 7 start menu. But obviously, what I'm trying to do is to play with Metro to get to understand
it. Get a bit of a feel for it.
Try and understand why that's a good thing. What I have found, though, is that it's a long way from being ready for public use, particularly for people who have a keyboard and mouse and who don't have a touchscreen.
Mm.
Even Microsoft, in all their talks about it in their big video they've got online from the Build conference, they talk again and again and again how it's touch-centric and how it's touch-first. So it's primarily a touch interface that's got other ways of using it added on later.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in its current state, there's a lot of things you can, or that work, or probably would work well with touch. I haven't got a touch screen on my laptop, so I'm trying to use it with a keyboard and mouse, and I'm finding a lot of frustrations. Like you would expect to be able to, you know, if you use your finger to flick to the left to move across to the icons that you can't see off the right hand end of the screen. And you see them demonstrating this on the videos, but if I click there with my mouse and try and drag it, doesn't do anything. You've got to use a scroll bar at the bottom of the screen to get to the other icons that are off the side of the screen.
Scroll bars on your desktop, that's horrible.
It is horrible. But as I say, it's pre-beta, it's not released yet, we're playing with it, learning about it.
Curious. Curiouser and curiouser.
What is clear is that this whole Metro interface is very, very tightly integrated with Internet Explorer.
Well, that's going to be my next question. Boot time and IE10, which is a beta in there, pre-beta in there as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, the preview of IE10 is in there as well.
Flashless, too.
Boot time, well, it's hard to judge because I'm booting it on a virtual machine. It seems fast.
Yep.
It's certainly, you know, it doesn't drag its feet too much in starting up. But this tight integration is what is what's interesting. The tiles that appear on the desktop that are sort of the way of launching apps, but they're also a way that apps can display information to you. It's very much in the model of an app on a phone or a tablet piece on a tablet rather than what we're used to on a PC. And they're basically written in web language. They're written in HTML5. So the whole thing is going to be, you're going to be using Internet Explorer just using the user interface, just using Windows.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole point of having an alternative browser is going to go out the window.
But IE has always been tightly interwoven with the Windows operating system. It's part
never
of
as tightly
site.
As this. It's getting tighter and tighter and tighter.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it goes, because I was reading in the during the course of the week that Flash, obviously, has gone the same way in Windows 8 as it has, or in this particular build of Windows 8, as it has with Apple's insistence.
Yeah, I think that's why. I think that's why it said it couldn't display the web page when I went to the chat.
Yep. Oh, really? I don't think there's any Flash on the chat, is there?
Oh, what? Okay. Well, it didn't like
not.
The chat.
No, because it works on Lena's Mac.
And my iPad.
And your iPad.
Macs can run Flash just fine. It's the iPads and the iPhones that can't.
That worked, didn't it?
I'm listening. I might not look like I am, but I am.
Well, whatever technology is used on the chat page, it obviously didn't like it. So
okay. Java, my friend. Java.
Yep.
Could be Java. Yeah.
Maybe you need to do a Java update or something like that. All right. Any other quick observations? We've talked about the boot. We haven't talked about it. On the website, the boot on Windows 8 from plugging a battery into a laptop and turning it on is very, very quick. Now, you've got a virtual machine. You haven't been able to give it a good run for its money because you haven't booted straight up.
Well, it's just hard to compare with anything else. It's not exactly slow starting up, but, yeah, it's just hard to know whether it's really fast or not.
All right. I'm sure there'll be people out there. I'll have a quick look through the chat, but I think they're all off on a different tangent out there. But anyway, that's par for the course, really, isn't it?
If you want to download the pre-beta version of Windows 8 that we're talking about, if you go to msdn.microsoft.com, click on the downloads button or the downloads link, and there's another link that says beta and technical preview downloads. That's in the list there.
You very can good.
Download it, but make sure you budget your bandwidth, because as Graham was saying, it's a large download.
And if you go, doing your off-peak. If you go to twitter.com/gcttr, there's a link to it from there.
Oh, that's a good tip.
I maxed out my off-peak downloads. Oh, sure. So Brian did it in the course of last billing period. I was very proud of him.
That's quite a feat.
It is quite a feat. It is quite a feat. We'll leave it at that, shall we? let's talk a little bit about something which is close to my heart, which I think, Dr. Ron, you covered off in the news a little bit, and that's what Optus is up to at the moment with its cloud-based delayed shifting, physical shifting, sneaky shifting of sporting events and replaying it in the PVR in your mobile phone. Have you you were across this during the course of the week?
I am. I have been across it.
Now
sneaky shifting. It's not format shifting.
Ah, that's right. Sneaky shifting.
It's not place shifting.
I'm going to wear two caps here because I'm a content creator, as a lot of you know, for not only this content but on free-to-air television, as well as a content consumer, because we all like listening to the radio and watching movies and downloading things and stuff like that online. Adam Turner is a regular on our show. He has a segment called View from the Couch, which you're about to hear, strangely enough. Now, Adam is a freelance journalist. He writes in all the major online publications and the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age and all that sort of stuff. So this is his View from the Couch this week on the very topic of Optus, Telstra, the AFL.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
Place shifting is finally set to get its day in court as the AFL attacks Optus's TV Now mobile service. Most people are familiar with the concept of time shifting, watching something later than was originally intended by the supplier of the content. It's something we do every day with VCRs and PVRs, recording our favourite shows from live TV to watch later when it suits us. We're also familiar with format shifting, watching something on another device or from another source. Every time you rip a CD to your computer, which is permitted under Australian law, or rip a DVD, which isn't permitted, you're format shifting. Shifting is all about convenience, but it tends to annoy the content providers as they don't care too much about what's convenient for us. Until now, there hasn't been much talk in Australia about place shifting, watching something in a location other than where the content supplier intended. Sometimes it's combined with time shifting and format shifting. Probably the most common form of place shifting in Australia is streaming video around your house. These days you can stream TV recordings between Topfield PVRs and between Panasonic PVRs. Plus you've got gadgets such as the Elgato ITV Netstream, which can stream live broadcasts around your home. You've also got the likes of the Slingbox or the Orb Media Server, which can stream TV around your home or even across the internet to your mobile devices. Of course, all of this kind of stuff comes as a shock to old world players like the AFL.
When I was a kid, I remember laughing at the warning that would scroll across the bottom of Channel 7's AFL footy replay, reminding you that you weren't allowed to record it using your humble VCR. Of course, it's only in the last few years that Australian law has actually permitted time and format shifting, even though we've been recording live TV and ripping CDs for years. Content providers have been dragged, kicking and screaming, into this new technological age which empowers consumers as well as content creators. Content providers have a long and inglorious history of attacking the various forms of content shifting. Back in the day, you had MPAA head Jack Vellante comparing the VCR to the Boston Strangler. Then you've got the Sony rootkit scandal and Australia's underhanded Freeview campaign designed to trick people into buying PVRs with the ad skipping disabled. If it was up to the copyright police, couches would come with manacles that would automatically chain us to the chair during the ad breaks, so we couldn't miss those important messages from sponsors. Play shifting has finally come to the attention of the AFL, Australia's most influential and arrogant sporting code, thanks to Optus's TV Now mobile service. Think of TV Now as a PVR in the cloud. You tell it which shows to record, and then it lets you stream those recordings to your iPhone. It even offers chasing playback, letting you watch a show while it's still recording, which is what the AFL is so annoyed about. Telstra paid $153 million for the online video rights, and the AFL feels that Optus's service is infringing on those rights. The sporting codes such as the AFL are worried that Telstra won't pay as much in the future if there are other ways to watch sport online. Of course, TV Now is nothing new. Australian services such as MyTVR have been running for more than 18 months. I'm sure MyTVR caught the AFL's attention, but they obviously thought it best to ignore it rather than bring more attention to it. I guess the Optus service is just too big to ignore, so they decided to try and crush it instead. Internet radio listeners have probably already discovered that you can't listen to the AFL games via the online simulcast of radio stations such as Triple M and 3AW. They're forced to play music on their internet channels during the game because Telstra has the online rights and wants you to listen via their service, even though there are ways around this if you're prepared to do your research. Having forced the radio stations to comply with such demands, the AFL and Telstra obviously feel they can do the same with Optus and TV Now. But it's not as straightforward as Telstra and the AFL make it out to be. Optus isn't actually broadcasting or simulcasting the AFL online as the radio stations might. All Optus is doing is letting you time and place shift the free-to-air broadcasts. It sounds like I'm splitting hairs, but it's a major distinction, and Optus believes it's protected by the fair use laws, which currently let you record the AFL at home to watch later. As I said, something that's only really been legal for a few years, even though it's been happening for decades. The battle between the AFL and Optus has major ramifications for the future of online entertainment services in Australia. The AFL and Telstra might like to throw their legal weight around, but it's quite possible that the law is on Optus's side. Should Optus lose this fight, all of our rights to time, format and play shift will be under threat.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So when does cutting somebody else's mustard become legal? You know, when
Excuse
I mean
me?
That. Well, if you look at what the deal that Telstra has done with the AFL, fair enough. They've paid good money for the rights. At what point in time in delay does it become fair and reasonable to turn it around? Now, I think I'm not 100% sure of Optus' deal here, but I think it's a personal service. So it actually turns
yes, that's
around
right.
personally. And it depends upon whether anybody wants to watch it down the track or whatever it is like that. But having said that...
A couple of seconds, it's fair game.
Really, Dr. Ron?
The service is called TV Now, and it was launched by Optus back in July. So it's a bit like a cloud TV recorder, like a VCR or a PVR in the cloud. So you log on and you say, oh, I want to watch this. Right-click, record, or record series or whatever, and it just records into the cloud, and you can watch what you want to watch whenever it suits you. But as we're saying, yeah, What's the acceptable delay there in terms of the decency delay, I suppose? You can watch it pretty much real time.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? If you're watching it on delay by 2 seconds, well...
Exactly.
You're probably getting it in advance of what people are getting on their digital televisions at home. But then again, as I think Gareth made a good point in the chat, their Channel 7 time shift, all their sports broadcast, although they call it live.
Yes.
I think he's referring to the AFL footy where they delay it by half an hour or something like that.
Yeah, but
they
present it as if it's live just to trick you, yeah.
Yeah. So as long as you haven't listened to the radio, you're okay.
The root of this problem is the right... My belief here, although there's a whole lot of people who are acting not necessarily in the best faith, but my real belief is that the root of the problem lies in the AFL. okay, and that the way they've sold the rights doesn't match up with the modern way that media works. They've sold the internet rights separately from the radio rights, separately from the television rights, separately from the pay television rights, not understanding, either through stupidity or through pig-headedness.
Yeah, but it's the old school, as Adam said.
That radio stations stream live to the internet, that TV stations have catch-up that processes, that, you know,
people like
internet
Optus.
Service providers are part of the internet service provision chain, and that not everything can be under the content provider's control. It's a lot. There's a lot of the modern world that they just haven't thought about, or if they've thought about it, they've decided to ignore and plunge through anyway, regardless of reality, in the way they've sold the rights.
It's an interesting discussion, but I guess from a content creator's point of view, you can come across issues which traditionally you would not normally come across. And I'm sort of saying, from, let's take Tech Talk Radio, for example, it's fine basically to, you know, there's no issues with it going out into the wild world on any particular medium, format, delayed or whatever. After all, it can be delayed up to a week. Having said that, there are other issues where you have sponsors involved, and sponsors have certain obligations in certain markets. So inadvertently, people rebroadcasting content in different marketplaces can in fact breach agreements which you have with
but other. Surely in this day and age, the agreements have to be framed with the modern landscape in mind. It's no good writing an agreement that's only enforceable in 1850.
Quite that easy in the world of content creation to do that, because content creators traditionally have control over where their content is consumed.
It's not that easy. So you're saying that because it's a little bit difficult, we shouldn't try and do it?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that because I think that if people asked and did the right processes and confirmed where they could run that content without incurring any issues down the track, then that's fine. But these guys doing delay on different sort of, you know, mediums, it can cause content creators grief because their content is being places where maybe it can't be due to agreements you have with sponsors.
Mod in our chat room says, is anyone going to mention that the grand final's not going to be broadcast in HD? No, we're not going to mention that, Mod.
Well, they didn't do it the other year, did they?
No.
They had a draw and they said, oh, we've done HD, that's it. Bad luck.
So the rerun was in standard def, wasn't it?
Oh. Mm. It was indeed.
And then there's a whole argument
about...
Then
they go up to Bathurst after that, I think. They go up and do the cars in 3D.
Yeah, if someone else in the chat room was saying
in high def, not in 3D.
Oh, high def.
High def.
Sorry.
Yeah. Now someone else in the chat room was mentioning, yeah, what about the V8 supercars, Primal, in the chat room?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But then there's the whole argument that HD is not HD anyway on television. So,
well, unfortunately, in this country, there's only two stations which run a 1,080 lines, and that's Gem. Gem. Yeah, yep. Channel 9's Gem and 7's Mate.
But I'd much rather watch the football grand final in 720 than I would in 576 lines.
Fair enough. It's got to be better, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it is noticeably better.
Yeah.
Because there's more lines.
She's getting techie on it. Should I play Moodle?
It's a bit premature. That's all right. There we go. Optus TV Now. Yeah, a lot of controversy. Controversy.
Yeah. So what's going to happen if this goes to court and they rule that you can't do this?
Well, they've got the Before I say that, let me say this. Optus has gone to the federal court seeking protection because they think that the AFL and then potentially the NRL
can't understand
and/or Telstra are going to sue it for breach of copyright. So they've filed for a preventative ruling,
safe harbour.
To say that what we're doing is lawful and you can't sue us, you can't take action against us.
Oh, I don't know. This is a very grey area.
The legal equivalent of, but Mum!
Yes.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And I don't think it's AFL related. I think it's all content related, whether it be anything from tiddlywinks through to soccer.
The whole industry-wide of owners of creative content, whether it be the AFL who are creating football matches to be broadcast in various ways, whether it be us creating Tech Talk Radio, whether it be Andrew creating his TV shows or whatever
stuff. Yeah,
then the whole industry needs to take a step backwards, think about how the real world works, and start selling your rights and writing your agreements in a way that matches the way the world works, okay? And understand what the internet is, how it's used, and where it fits into the picture, okay? Because it's absolutely crazy, you know, if I'm listening to 774, the ABC station in Melbourne, I can listen to it half a dozen different ways and get the same program.
No football.
Except for the football, because of the stupid way the AFL have done their rights.
Mm-hmm.
Now that...
Is it stupid, is it?
It is. It is stupid. It's short-sighted. It's stupid in that they're not taking into account...
Well, look at the BBC
...the way the actual world works.
Yeah. They're trying to enforce a terrestrial boundary.
They're trying to enforce rules that would have worked in a world before we had the internet. Okay, they're treating the internet as being a separate and distinct thing that's not part of the mainstream, where now it is.
Oh, and it will consume. It will take over. Most content in the next little bit will be taken over on the internet. I was having a discussion at the office just the other day in respect to the fact that you look at what free-to-air television has at the moment and you look at what the internet has at the moment. Now, if you know how to, you can watch anything, anytime, anywhere, any why on the internet. Easy. Whereas... TV stations and broadcasters, because that content which I speak of, I glossed over just in that statement, if you want to watch something that originates in the United States or in Europe, you can watch that on your television set streamed over the internet. And what that means is that when it's first run here, most people would have seen it. So
these
are the conundrums that they're going to have.
Well, and this is more people who are living in the past and not living in the future. They don't understand that the internet doesn't respect national borders. The internet is not a broadcast TV station that only transmits a certain distance. The internet is worldwide, and these are people who are trying to enforce the old rules of saying you can broadcast on that station but not that station. Trying to enforce that onto the internet where it doesn't fit and it doesn't work.
I don't think it's a station-based type sort of thing. I think it's a territory-based.
Well,
thing.
That's what they do it in the old days before we had the internet. That wasn't a problem. You could say stations in America can transmit it on this date. Stations in Europe can transmit it on this date. You might get the odd anomaly where someone's listening just over the border in Mexico and they can receive it even though they're not technically in America. But you know, they enforce it by that, and that was close enough for them. Now they're trying to apply those rules to the internet where it doesn't work and doesn't fit, and you get problems. So what they've got to do is start reframing the way they think to fit with the modern landscape. And whether that means that the content providers become a bit more separated from the TV networks or whoever it is that they're going to have to. Because TV is changing as well. That's the other part of the equation.
Oh, yes.
You're going to find that in 10 or 15 or 20 years, or I don't know how long, that the creators of hit TV shows like, I just pick an example out of my head, you know, NCIS or whatever, are going to be selling their content through different means. They're not going to be tied to a particular TV station. They're going to be selling their content by other means. You might subscribe to it directly from your TV and have it delivered over the internet.
Graham, on your nice big new shiny Sony Bravia television at home.
Yes.
Do you have a TV antenna plugged into it?
No.
Enough said.
Okay, you can go and put the cat out now, or let it in, whichever the case might happen to be.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Google has opted out of Germany now.
But that's not the whole problem.
Lino, help us. You need to come back. All is forgiven.
Yeah, what do you want? I can't deal with this now.
Absolutely.
That's very wrong.
It was very rude.
And obviously pretty good on the batteries too.
Not happy, Jan.
Oh, well. You have nothing here which does not have an Apple on it.
That's the way I like it.
Couldn't even tell whether you were male or female.
No. Frankly, no.
Have you worked out the five-finger fondle yet?
I hate toolbars on browsers.
Yes.
That really drives me insane.
Yes.
That lacks couth as well.
That lacks complete couth.
Graham took umbrage during the week with a ranking system that I developed on the forum.
Should have known that was coming.
A good cabler is worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Mm. Let's talk about Apple, shall we?
Yay.
Oh, Apple scandal.
Yeah. That's when I got out. They pull me back in.
Entertaining.
They post some lolcats.
No, they haven't posted any lolcats yet that I've seen.
Informative.
At some point, litigation must come to an end.
Exactly.
Independent.
I'm not queuing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio. It's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, you are. And that was, yes, we've had a break now. Where have you boys been? You just came in the nick of time there, did you?
Been here all the time. What are you on about?
What you're talking about, Andrew.
Oh, really? Oh,
sitting here like a coiled spring at the microphone.
Is that what it's...
Waiting for that... Yes, break to finish.
Okay, very good. All right, Tech Talk Radio.
.com.au. Talk... So what
you can, no, you can do that if you like.
All right.
Optus forge ahead with LTE. Everyone's getting in on this so-called high-speed data access-y thing sort of stuff. You've got to remember that the NBN Co, which is the National Broadband Network, is using this LTE technology to connect up the remote people, the people that it's not practical enough or too expensive to hook fibre optics up.
Okay, pause. Okay. NBN Co, National Broadband Network.
That's them.
And LTE, long-term evolution,
yep,
is the next version of mobile phone standards after what we currently call 3G.
Yep. Tad faster.
And some people are calling it 4G.
It's not.
Which is technically not correct, but that's what... But you'll see it advertised as 4G.
Yeah.
Particularly from Telstra, and I haven't seen what they're doing with their advertising. Telstra are calling it 4G.
Yeah, are they? Okay, well, they've got their stuff going, their LTE stuff going in the cities. They promised to have it by December, and I think in most of the major cities around Australia now, there is that network's been enabled, but you'd probably be the only person using it if you have such a device, because I don't think there's anything out there yet, is there?
Well, the Telstra have got theirs working it within, I think it's 4 or 5 kilometres of the centre of the city in Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney, and somewhere else, I can't think what the fourth place is.
Brisbane, did you say?
I said Brisbane.
Oh, maybe Adelaide. Think. Canberra.
Could be Adelaide. Can't remember. Someone will correct me.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe that there are some devices being sold to business customers, to major corporations and so on.
Yeah.
But they're not to the general public at this stage, as far as I'm aware.
Very good.
So Optus are now talking about setting up their LTE network.
Yep. They're going to launch their own LTE network in April of next year. And they're the third carrier to basically make that announcement. Telstra planned to launch LTE services in capital cities next month. Vodafone Hutchison Australia had voiced similar plans but was yet to announce a launch time. So I guess they've all got to keep up with the Joneses, because otherwise they don't have the edge that the opposition does, really, do they?
No, well, you've got to keep moving. There's a lot more data usage going on, so you've got to get more speeds and so on to match the way people are starting to use their devices.
Interesting,
though. LTE can do up to, I believe, 300 megabits per second, but that's...
That's in with lab rats, isn't it?
Yeah, that's an ideal speed that you never achieve in real life, just like at the moment Telstra talk about 21 megabits per second when you're lucky to get 2.
I get 5 on the kitchen bench at home.
Yeah, well, there you go. You see? Still not 21, is it?
No, but it's not 2. A bit harsh there on Telstra. I know there's a lot of people who turned across from Vodafone and those networks to Telstra. That might have slowed it down in some areas.
Had you been paying attention during my previous rants, Andrew, you would know that I do like Telstra's network. It's my favourite network by far.
I had an interesting call from Vodafone the other day.
Did you?
That I didn't tell you about. They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad. I said, everywhere.
What?
Where my data coverage was
dropping out. Oh, you're with Vodafone, aren't you, Lena?
Yes, I am. And they wanted to know about...
Did you say I didn't think I had data on my phone?
Yeah. There is? I had no idea.
Is that what that E means when
it
comes up?
I know I've been paying for it for a long time, but I didn't realise I could access it as well.
Hmm. So he told me to tell him where it all sort of dropped out.
See, and then Vodafone have unlimited plans, don't they? Like, everything's... What's the, infinite, I think they call it now, isn't it? Because the network's so slow, everything's infinite because you can never get a cap, near a cap or something?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know.
So do you use data on that network or not?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, on my phone.
And it works?
I use data. Yes, it does.
Is it fast?
It does drop out certain places.
Does it work in here? Because I always had problems.
Yes. It works in here. It doesn't work at my local supermarket at all. It's like a bunker in there. But I was really impressed, actually, by that, the way that they called up to say they wanted to tell me that there were some on a grey list or something, some areas, some suburbs that were on some list that were being improved in the not-too-distant future. I think they're getting a lot of people churning and they're trying to say, please stay, we're fixing it, we know we're bad, but we're fixing
rats off a sinking ship, I think, at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit.
Anyway, Optus first LTE service will be available. They're going to target the rural areas, Newcastle, Port Stephens, Hunter Valley, Macquarie Valley from April of next year, and then later on, a few months after that, they're going to hit, as you'd expect, Sydney, Melbourne and Perth. Sorry, Adelaide. Sorry, Brisbane. Sorry, Canberra. Sorry, Darwin.
Oh, it'll get there in the end.
Well, yeah, they cherry pick, don't they, these guys?
You've got to start somewhere.
You do? You do indeed. And speaking of starting somewhere,
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Expecting a double whack this week because we didn't have one last week.
Uh-oh. Well, you may be disappointed, but you may... No, there's something very interesting caught my eye today that I'm quite proud of. You know how gamers have a bit of a shtick? We have a bit of a stigma about us sort of all living in our parents' basements and having pimples and not being
Say
very
it's not
friendly.
So.
I'm plenty friendly and I'm a homeowner. gamers
Then
have
why
helped...
do you live in your parents' basement?
I don't.
Oh.
Online gamers have cracked the AIDS enzyme puzzle that scientists have been trying to deal with for 10 years.
I could say all sorts of things here, but I'll just go, is that so?
Yes.
How is that so?
Well, I'll read out what I've got down here. Online gamers have achieved a feat beyond the realm of Second Life or Dungeons & Dragons. See, we're worth more than just playing games. They've deciphered the structure of an enzyme of an AIDS-like virus that scientists have been trying to figure out for ages.
What were gamers doing playing with AIDS viruses?
Well, they weren't playing with the viruses themselves. They were using a program...
Oh, so they didn't have test tubes
not
out or anything.
Directly.
Oh, okay. Sorry. They got up to a lot of things in their basements, didn't they?
Yeah. A program called Foldit was developed in 2008 by the University of Washington. It's a video game where gamers are divided into competing groups and they have to try and unfold chains of amino acids using a set of sort of online tools and whatnot. They actually produced an accurate 3D model of the enzyme in just 3 weeks, which is something that scientists hadn't been able to do. They'd just been looking at a microscope image of the structure of the proteins, which is quite flat. They needed the 3D. Pharmacologists need a 3D picture to sort of look at the way it unfolds in the molecule, and they can rotate it and have a look and then try and reveal potential targets for the drug. So this could all help save lives. Gamers are making the world a better place. Slowly but surely. And I'm sticking to it. Jane McGonigal actually has a book called Reality is Broken, How Gamers Can Make the World a Better Place. And I think she'd be pretty chuffed with this latest little
This is amazing
story.
Stuff. So where to from here?
Well, it helps the pharmacologists look at the structure of the proteins themselves, which then they can understand the causes of the diseases and help try and develop the drugs to block them. So
they can custom design a drug to attach to be able to interact with this exact protein.
Yes.
By using the shape of it.
Yes. And it was...
By using the three-dimensional shape of it.
Yeah, exactly. And seeing it in 3D is what I think the clincher
is. Critical point. Yeah.
Very impressive.
But it's the first time that both gamers and researchers have been honoured as co-authors in... it was in the journal Nature, Structural and Molecular Biology.
Yeah, so, there's... trying to model these proteins takes a huge amount of computing power.
Mm.
And there are other projects about to use the unused... power of your computer so that to use your computer's processor time when it's idle to do that similar sort of work as well, similar to the old SETI at Home project that they used to have that uses it to decipher radio signals.
Mm.
So, yeah, but this is an actual game that people have played to make it competitive. And of course, as soon as you make it competitive...
Yep. it uses different parts of the brain. So, you know, the different logic processes when you are competing with someone is something...
It's a fascinatingly designed project.
Yeah, so they're almost gamifying science.
Yeah.
So it's very cool to think of what the possibilities could be there. That really impressed me, that story, and I want to keep it...
That's an impressive story.
Yeah, to keep my eye on it and see how it all progresses. Another thing that's happened in the last week was the Tokyo Game Show, which is a fairly big deal in the game world.
What was released? Were all the players there, as in the manufacturers?
Yeah, well, all of the Japanese ones.
Well, that is the main manufacturers, isn't it? Aren't they all at
Somewhat.
The Sony's and the Nintendo's and the
Sony. Yeah, Sony was there.
Did you go?
Was it? No, I didn't, unfortunately, no.
Lena.
I know,
I think
I know.
You've been to just about every other game show, expo conference.
I wish.
In this country, haven't you? In the last 12 months?
Maybe in
you've
this country.
You've been interstate quite
yes,
a bit?
Yes, I have. GDC's coming up too. That's a big one.
Who?
We're going to GDC, the Game Developers Conference.
Where is that one?
In Melbourne this year.
Melbourne. Woo-hoo. You're going to travel all the way to Melbourne?
Yes, I will. The 20 minutes into the city. at the Tokyo Game Show on the first day.
Record crowd.
Yeah, they had 86,200 people compared to 81,000 last year.
Yeah, that's more than you get at a Collingwood. No, I won't get it.
No, it's not.
No, it's not actually. You're so right there, Graham.
61,000 attended the year before, so it's increasing by quite a bit.
Why the fascination of the Tokyo Game Show? Is it like NAB for the television gurus where they bring out new products and release them there?
There's a lot of things are playable for the first time in a while, so it's people do go along to try and play the new greatest things. But these numbers are even bigger than the 2006 show, which had the PlayStation 3's first public unveiling. So that gives you an idea of just how much this is a sort of a runaway freight train of showness. The PlayStation Vita was confirmed as region-free at the Tokyo Game Show this year, which is very exciting.
Region-free? Well, all the games were region-free, were they?
Yes. So the PlayStation Vita itself isn't region-locked. You won't, like
Hang
the
on.
PlayStation Vita.
Sony were listening to my rant from earlier in the show.
They must have been.
Absolutely,
and they
Graham.
Retroactively changed everything last week.
Let's see
screwdriver
applies
out.
To movies and TV shows.
Yeah,
well, so Sony own a lot of those too.
Well, don't remember their Rootac?
Oh, yes.
Don't talk about the war.
Now, the PlayStation Vita, Lena, or mm-hmm. Vita, or however you pronounce
yes,
it.
Yes, I'm not sure which one.
That's going to be the next, in effect, the PlayStation 4, is it?
Or no,
is it
the PlayStation Portable, the next
oh, that's
portable
right.
device.
Yep, because yep. there is going to be a PlayStation 4 as well, isn't
yes,
there?
Yes, there is. Okay. There is. But it being region-free is, and it's in direct competition with the 3DS, Nintendo 3DS.
So if I get one of these guys, I can order games over the interwebs and I can have them delivered and doesn't matter where they come from, they'll work in this device.
Exactly. And it means that the device you buy is the same everywhere as well. So the Nintendo 3DS, people had to buy, you know, if you're a fan of Japanese role-playing games, JRPGs, it's a specific sort of genre in its own right. It's very hard to get them in this country. And if you wanted to play a lot of JRPGs, you had to get a 3DS from Japan because it was region locked. So having a region-free PlayStation Vita means all the JRPG fans and all the people who want to play games from Japan who live here can play.
JRPGs like animes, or are they just
a little bit? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I could imagine them like
equivalent.
That.
Equivalent, yeah. But it's definitely a genre all of its own. So that was pretty much the biggest thing that came out of TGS. But there was all different areas of the show showcasing different things. The general area had Capcom, Sony, Square Enix, and sort of a console focus, and a lot of the PlayStation Vita.
Phoenix in our chat says, I don't think PSPs were region locked either. I must admit, I've got a PSP at home and mine's not region locked. It's only region locked for DVDs. It'll play any Blu-ray and it'll play any game.
Yeah, I don't think
every game I've thrown at it.
I don't think the PSP is region locked. Yep.
Are you talking PS3, Andrew, or PSP?
No, PSP is different.
Oh, PSP is different?
Yeah, PlayStation Portable.
Yeah, no, PS3 plays everything you throw at it except a region 4 DVD if you're buying in the United States.
I know that the old Nintendo portable handheld game things, whatever they're called, were region locked because I know people that have got two of them for that reason.
Haven't they got a new one coming out? The new PSP? Is it? Or am I
that's
reading
the PlayStation
wrong?
Vita. The PSP, yeah.
That's what Lena's been talking about.
Okay, sorry. I've just, the penny's dropped now. I'm sorry. I'm back into my rock.
Catch it on the podcast.
I will. Yeah, yeah.
You should listen to the show.
Someone's got to keep an eye on the chat. So region-free is a really big deal for the people who want to get games from all over the world. Specifically JRPG fans in Australia are very happy with that. There was also an advanced mobile gaming and PC area, so a lot of Japanese mobile phone companies and all that were showcasing things over there. And there was a kids area and an area about education about game development. So if you want to learn to be a game developer, there was sort of a section you could go to learn all about what university courses to do and that sort of thing. And a sales area where all the transactions between companies and consumers were carried out. So it's pretty stock standard, but it was a big hit compared to future years. So next year's looking pretty good.
Well, very good. All right, so there's a bit of a gaming update.
Yes, a small one, but a good one.
Yeah, no, it was good. No, all good. All good. I learned something.
Well, there we go.
I thought the PSP4 was now called the whatever, the Vita.
PSP.
Can you tell I'm the gamer in the group?
PSP4? Hang on a minute.
No, you're really PSP. Confusing your world now.
Andrew. Absolutely.
Pull his fader down, Lena.
We should, for the sake of consistency, we should decide now. Are we going to say Vita or Vita?
I'm just doing a search to try and find out if there's any guidance.
It's Latin for life.
Oh, my goodness.
So it'd probably be Vita if it's like curriculum vitae. Oh, Vita. It'd be Vita.
Yes. What about vital? You don't say Vital.
Yeah, you don't say Vital.
Unless you're a
Beetle.
Beetle Beetle.
All right. Well, we'll work on that for next week, shall we?
Tell us whether it should be Vita or Vita.
Someone will tell us. And whilst we're talking about these things, these small gadgety types of things, you know the Android operating system that's out now on all these little phones? Well, the bot market's growing in that as well. You know these little nasty things that turn into zombies and attack websites from afar? Used to be restricted to computers and desktops. So
people are zombieifying Android phones, are they?
They are indeed. According to research, there in the first half of 2011, there were 40,000 zombie Android devices. People walking around with a phone running the Android operating system that had been zombified. Hello, Graham's.
How do you kill it?
Put in the washing machine. That'll work.
First birthday.
It'll kill the zombie?
It'll definitely kill. It'll kill him dead.
Some 20,000 devices were under control of botnets by March, and that number fell after Google deployed the remote kill function to remove malicious applications from Android. Remember that when that was all came to a head not so long ago? So, yes, watch out if you've got Android things and you're putting strange things on it. It might turn into a bot, and your broadband plan will go through the roof.
Nice not having to worry about that.
Well,
just saying.
Well, and poor old
crazy Apple disciples. You think you're so clever, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah, it'll come back and bite them on the you know what twice as hard.
No, it won't.
Yeah, well, that's why everyone's afraid to upgrade to the latest line.
Eat your Vita wheats.
That's nothing to do with being an open or a closed market. That's complete user error.
Have you worked out what Apple S is yet?
Yes.
Good. Okay.
Like, control open Apple reset.
What happened there? All jokes and things aside.
It's proprietary software that I'm using to edit the next Gamebook adventure for Tin Man Games. It's very, very exciting, and it's a program that's been built specifically for this purpose. So all the other things don't apply. All my little savey things don't apply. And what I did was overwrote one of the editor and the writer speaking here who can't actually speak or write or edit.
I get go with my English before.
I overwrote one of my saves with a previous version.
Okay. This is why Lena wasn't in last week.
This is why I had a deadline and it was bad. It was terrible.
It was.
We all felt for you. We were watching your tweets.
You didn't feel for me. You were laughing at me and saying mean things.
We were not.
You were.
I think we were at sub-level sympathetic.
Yes, yes.
You should have heard us in the car park afterwards, but that's another story.
One interesting thing, since we're just talking about Apple World and Apple disciples for the moment,
zealots.
I've just been, as we spoke earlier, playing with the new Windows 8, which is very touch-centric and clearly designed for use on small, touchy devices. I have a horrible feeling that they are seriously targeting Windows 8 to target the iPad specifically because it will run on a tablet device but still be a full PC, whereas the iPad is a vaguely overgrown iPhone without a phone in it and a big screen. It can't run normal Windows programs, whereas Windows 8 will run on a touch type device like a tablet, like an iPad. Although not an iPad, obviously, but still be able to run all your full-blown Windows programs. So you won't have this problem of, why can't I run MYOB on my iPad? Why can't I run, Photoshop on my iPad?
Why would you run Photoshop on your iPad? Why would you run MYOB on your iPad? They're designed for desktops, aren't they? Are you just...
Yeah, but Windows are going to combine those two worlds into one.
Yeah, be interesting to see.
And I think that's kind of what they're aiming at.
Well, one platform makes it a lot easier for developers. You don't have to develop for multiple platforms and do all that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
I think
just for multiple interfaces on the same platform. So
yeah. Well, let's just talk briefly about RIM, Research in Motion. You know, the makers of
the BlackBerry people.
That's them. They're in dire straits at the moment. Their cash flow has fallen and their forecast profits and all that have fallen by half. So is this going to be the end of the BlackBerry now that we've got these tablets and these smartphones and things like that?
Oh, that's harsh.
That is harsh.
Far out, Brussels sprout.
When I was in the United States, there was plenty of these around. I would have thought there was fairly, you know, a saturation market, but maybe now's the time. Everyone's churning away and getting new devices. And
yeah, the BlackBerry was the iPhone of before we had the iPhones. Everybody had to have a BlackBerry.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot of BlackBerries in the States.
But it's old technology. Its time has passed now.
BlackBerries were traditionally targeted at business users.
Mm. Yep.
And
celebrities.
Really? Why celebrities?
And CEOs who wanted to seem like they were connected, even though they had no clue of what they were doing.
Oh, yeah, I've bumped into a few of those. Normally, they come into the office and say, you know how to do this?
Whereas those same people now have got, those same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh, dear.
Ouch. Now, hang on. Because
no,
US.
I think I'm going to have to pull a
Fraser Sanders.
Here we go.
Let's play.
Here we go.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
This is breakfast radio in some parts of the world.
He wanted to ring the police, but he wanted to do so anonymously.
Speaking of Qantas, it's
what you shoot yourself in the face.
You shoot yourself in the face.
Dr. Ron, have you cyber squatted?
There are free tools to do most of these things.
I usually enjoy your podcast.
Oh, because the old iPad just
that's
like,
what the iPad's for.
Entertaining.
Put your fingers in your ears. La, 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 la.
Informative.
The consumer is the winner.
Independent.
You've got to find the sweet spot.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
I think it's safe to come back in now, isn't it, Dr. Ron?
I had a couple of personal messages in the chat room then from a number of people saying, is everything okay in the studio?
Yeah, oh, it's getting ugly here for a minute. We were talking, oh,
goodness,
we crossed a line that needed to be crossed, and unfortunately.
And I'm sitting in the middle.
You are.
Oh. My eye hurts.
Can I come back into the studio?
Come on, Graham, come back on in. Sit down. Sit down in front of the microphone.
Oh.
Oh, dear. See what happens when gross generalisations just get a bit out of control?
It was gross generalisation.
It was, wasn't it? Anyway.
Disgusting generalisation.
Didn't generalise.
Shh. Oh, no.
Quiet.
Andrew hasn't got any more breaks there on his disc.
Another bucket of water, please. Anyway, I'm sure it'll continue off in the car park after the show. All right, this is Tech Talk Radio. Microsoft Adobe announced their forthcoming patches. You know, Patch Tuesday? Well, apparently there's going to be another biggie coming along.
Patch Tuesday is Microsoft world. This is Adobe world.
Yeah, Adobe's getting on board with Microsoft as well. They're all deciding to do stuff on Patch Tuesday. So both of them are going to do it. As part of its monthly patch program, Microsoft is readying 5 security bulletins, all rated important, to address 15 vulnerability. Is that why my device went off gargars tonight?
Patch Tuesday was last week.
It seems like every time I shut down a Windows 7 computer at the moment, it installs updates. Like the same computer, 3 days in a row, it's installing updates every time I shut it down.
Yeah, well, I had a massive one on my little notebook tonight at the office. It put 14 or 15, it took me half an hour to get out the door because I couldn't turn the damn thing off.
Yeah, I must admit, I've seen some chain updates going on. I think there must be updates that depend on other updates. So
it's important to do them.
Progressive updates.
They can't load them all at the same time.
All right. Mm. Do you want to, just because we've got new listeners to our station tonight, or to our show, Graham, do you want to go through the mantra of updates and how important they are?
Updates are important.
Just do them.
Cool story, bro.
No, seriously. What Andrew's getting at is that I do frequently do this rant, and I'm sorry to the listeners who've heard it before.
No, it's a good rant to do.
But, yeah, you do hear occasionally people who complain about all these updates that happen, and they don't install them, and some people who won't install the updates because they're afraid that the update might break the computer. And the fact is that, yes, occasionally Microsoft or Adobe or someone else does release an update that's got a problem on some computers and causes you issues. But the reason for the updates is because there are known security flaws usually. This is the one of the main reasons for updates. Not the only one. Sometimes they add features or fix other problems. But often it's to do with security flaws in products. And the reason they're pushing an update out is because the security flaw has become known in the wild, and someone could write a virus or worm or some bit of malicious software to take over your computer and, you know, use your computer to send out spam or something like that.
Turn it into a zombie, as we spoke of.
That's what we're talking about. People might know what turning your computer into a zombie means. It means that someone's got control of your computer and is doing things with it that aren't what you want.
As opposed to having a zombie operate the computer, which I've seen on numerous occasions in certain offices.
Yeah, but the risks of not doing the update and being vulnerable to these security flaws is much greater than the risk of the update doing damage to your computer. So even though there is a risk either way, the safest way is to install the updates when Microsoft says to install the updates. And the same with Adobe, and the same with Sun's Java if you've got Java installed. So Adobe will send out updates to your Flash Player.
And they don't send notifications via email, do they, Graham?
And to your PDF reader and all that sort of stuff. That's right. No reputable software company will send out update notifications by email. Use the built-in automatic updating mechanisms in the software. So with Windows, use Windows Update, which is on your start menu. And you can configure it so that it automatically installs updates at 3 in the morning.
We've had this discussion about who leaves their computer on at 3 in the morning.
Well, if you leave your computer on so that it can do things like virus scans and updates and so on during the middle of the night, you don't have to spend 15 minutes in the morning waiting for your computer to start up before you can start doing any work.
Hmm.
Turn the screen off. Screen pulls a lot of power. You set your computer to save the... Sorry, there's a couple of strange sounds happening in the studio here, but I'll press on. What was I saying?
You can set your computer to when it's running overnight. Gets to 3 a.m. in the
gets
morning.
Gets to 3 a.m. Automatically installs the updates.
Yep.
What I was going to say is you can set your computer to stop the hard disk. The hard disk is one of the things that consumes a lot of power. So your computer actually goes into a very low power mode. And... it doesn't use a lot of power compared with the amount of unproductive time you have to spend starting and stopping your computer and waiting for it to start up in the morning. So, yeah, sometimes it is good to leave your computer on. The moral of the story was do your updates. Use the built-in updates in your programs. There's all the Adobe products, Flash and Adobe Reader and so on, come with built-in updaters. Windows comes with a built-in updater. Mac operating system comes with a built-in updater, which you can set to do similar things. And it's important to load them for security reasons.
Smoked Salmon in our chat room says, Adobe itself is really malware. All other updates are a good idea.
Ooh.
That's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Probably a little bit harsh.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you, Smoked.
One other thing to be aware of, though, with Adobe products and some other updates, particularly Sun Java and a few other things.
Java's all the time at the moment.
Sometimes when you see them offer the update and you have to go click next, next, next through the process to let it install the update.
Oh, watch out for those awful toolbars.
Very often they'll try and install toolbars at the same time as installing the update. Make sure you notice that little box and you untick it, because they've pre-ticked it for you.
Yeah, that's how they get their money, isn't it?
So,
in some of the free apps.
Now, don't let them get away with it. Untick the box. Don't install the extra toolbars or whatever extras they're trying to bundle in with it. And just
anti-spyware,
just
anti-malware is a common one these days.
The Norton PC scan or whatever it's called. Yeah,
those toolbars
really annoys me.
Take up more space in your web browser.
All of those things. If you've already got them installed, go into Add Remove Programs and uninstall them. And next time you do your updates, make sure you just watch as you click next, 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 just to untick that box to not install the extras that you don't need.
Graham, with your Windows 8, have you noticed any strange updates come through, or is it all pretty much just...
Oh, I haven't had it running enough to notice, no.
Wondering if it's trying to do updates already, whether Windows are updating there.
No, I only got it installed late last week, and it's hardly been connected to the internet.
I've got to do mine, surely. I wouldn't play 32. Sorry, Doran, what were you going to say?
Oh, don't just next through all those dialogues blindly. Read what it is that...
Yeah, well, it depends whether you're one of these shoot first, ask questions people later. I work with one in the office.
What did you call him?
Don't be that.
Stop clicking.
Fast Finger Freddy.
Yeah, don't be Fast Finger Freddy.
Read what you're clicking.
Yeah, you don't have to read it all in detail, but just take a bit of notice of what's going on so that you notice that extra thing that's is offering you and that is pre-ticked for you so that you can untick it.
Very good. In other news, Samsung Galaxy Tab has, the ban? It's been upheld in Germany. The German regional court has upheld a preliminary injunction preventing the sale of Samsung's tablet because of, I think it was over in patents and all that sort of stuff, wasn't it?
It's a patent dispute with Apple. Apple are claiming that Samsung have stolen technology from their iPhone and iPads.
And its release has been postponed here in Australia indefinitely as well for the same reason.
Are we going to see a lot of this? Everyone's just snapping up. I think we spoke about it on the show a couple of weeks back. Everyone's snapping up patents to try and block their competitors from using that sort of technology and... just becoming obstructionist.
Yes, whereas the software patent offices in various countries should be being more vigilant about not allowing patents on things that shouldn't ultimately be patentable.
Yes.
A patent is for genuine innovation, for something that that's a gadget or a contraption that no one's thought of before.
You shouldn't
not for the concept of sliding to unlock something, or not for the concept of clicking on a button to buy something.
Touching something with a finger. I'm going to patent that.
Was one of you guys saying that we had to? Someone had the one click buy now thing patented.
Yeah, Amazon.
That's right, Graham.
That's right.
And everyone now has to do two clicks instead of one, to avoid the patent.
To avoid infringing on Amazon's patent. That's right. You can't have a single click to buy.
You're right. Where does enough is enough? Where does common sense kick in?
Yeah.
And
software is something you can have copyright over, but it's not something you can patent. Or it shouldn't be. The legal fact is at the moment that it is something that is patented, but it shouldn't be.
Mm. Was that Phoenix? Yeah, stifling innovation. Absolutely.
Absolutely, yes.
South Korea...
Patents are intended to encourage innovation, and what these patents are doing is not that.
I saw a funny cartoon during the week.
Really? Yeah. Is this going to work on radio?
Yeah, I think it will. Yeah, it was set in a courtroom, and someone had a refrigerator in front of the bar table, and they were saying...
Oh, I think I've seen this, too. Is this on Google Plus or something?
Yeah, see, Your Honour, if you stand back about 15 metres and look at it this way, it looks a bit like an iPad. And the judge said, yeah, agreed. Yeah, can't make that refrigerator.
Oh, I hope we're not coming to that.
Oh, I think we are.
Anyway, Samsung can appeal to the court's name in Dusseldorf, which I'm not going to try and pronounce, because you guys will get into me.
Graham will let it out.
Promo, no. and they can then have that injunction lifted. But at this point in time, the ban's going to remain in place until it takes its true course, I guess. So, in other news, Google is secretly spending hundreds of millions of dollars turning YouTube into a cable TV alternate.
Well, it's not secret anymore.
No, it's not. But it's been...
Andrew, what have you done?
It's not secret. It's on the news.
Cat's out of the bag.
Oh, dear. But last year, I think we spoke about the fact they're looking for a couple of YouTube channels which will be like TV channels where you can actually just click on and watch, and there's content being developed for that. So, that was, I think, a couple of months back. Anyway, a couple of industry sources have said that Google is actually spending much more than that of acquiring content for YouTube, perhaps as $500 million more. So there's some gossip and scuttlebutt. Ooh. So, because there's also other things you can use on YouTube. You can create channels and you get paid per click or something like that. You can actually create your own TV channel. I know Brian in the office was talking about it the other day, and there's people earning hundreds of thousands of dollars just by making silly videos on YouTube and having their own channel.
Yep. They give out Emmy awards to YouTubers as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Karen Alloy has won an Emmy for one of her YouTube videos.
How many years do you reckon it'll be before we see the first major program, something like... Big Bang Theory, that's a good example, move from a major American network to Google?
Less than two.
So no longer is Big Bang Theory going to be on...
Is it CBS or one of those?
It's one of those. I'm hoping you'd know which one. It's one of those.
NBC.
NBC, I think.
And they're going to say, no longer are we an NBC program. We're a Google program now.
And this is what we were saying earlier on in the show too, Graham. This is where content providers have to be aware of this. And they've got to look at these new delivery platforms.
CBS.
This is where it will end up going.
Google will do a deal saying that you pay $5 an episode, which is going to be, how many episodes a year? 25. So $100 a year. Might be even less than that.
But Big Bang Theory stands to...
And you can have it delivered to your TiVo or your whatever
Apple
it is
TV.
Or your Apple TV or whatever it is that you've got attached to your TV.
And it doesn't matter where you are in the world. It'll play out at exactly the same time.
It'll appear for playback on your device.
That's great. That would be
good. And the TV networks will be cut out of it. Now, that doesn't mean that the TV networks will go away. What's going to happen to TV is what happened to radio when TV came out. Instead of listening to your serials... listening to your stories on the radio, you listen to your stories on the TV, and the radio became for news and current events and talkback and that sort of stuff, and music. So, and TV will become for something else. TV will be news and live sports and those sorts of things, but not the primary delivery for programs like that.
Programs, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
You reckon within
2 years, we're going to see major upheaval in this broadcasting environment.
Now, what about another thing? What if it was to come about, instead of having the end user subscribe to each individual TV show, what if your ISP, Telstra, or Optus, or Internode, or IINet, did a deal with Google to say that we'll give we'll charge our subscribers $5 more a year or $5 more a month or whatever it might happen to be, and our subscribers will get all the Google content through our ISP service.
Unmetered?
Well, who knows? So that takes away the sting of that the consumer feels, I've always been able to download this for free, and now I'm going to get it that I can download it for free through my internet connection.
I can understand that working in a non-metered environment, but I don't know whether people are...
Well, you could do it non-metered because it would work to the ISP's advantage. Instead of each individual customer downloading Big Bang Theory every week, Internode could download it once to their server and then distribute it to their...
Yeah, and play it out.
To their customers on the internal network without it costing them external data.
Mm. No, it's... Valid point.
I have a suspicion that might be one way that things will go. That you'll
crystal
get
ball.
You'll get your ISP and you'll subscribe to your channels or your groups of channels the same way you do currently with your pay TV subscription.
Well, Fetch is doing that for iiNet right now, but they're charging Foxtel rates, and I don't think Foxtel rates are sustainable in the short term in this country because we just don't have the consumer base for it.
That's a market decision, but as long as we keep the playing ground level. So that the content delivery is separate from the media over which it's delivered, then we'll have a fair go for everybody and a fair marketplace to decide the cost of these things.
Yeah, indeed.
But all right. The bad side of that would be if Telstra do a deal with Google to say you can get your Google content through Telstra, but no one else in Australia, no other ISPs in Australia
that
are allowed to then that would be bad.
But that will open up all sorts of other scurrilous things.
But that's exactly the sort of thing that Telstra do.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and all those players do. That's what we've got to avoid, and that's what we've got to make sure our competition regulator stamps on.
Fingers crossed, big changes. We've got an Oddspot gadget website and app of the week coming up in just a moment. But before we do that, GD sent through a very interesting email to us during the course of the week about this bus which is coming from the heavens and going to land somewhere between latitude 57 up and down. So if you're walking outside at night, just keep an eye in the nighttime sky. Because during the day, it'll hit you like a bus. But at least at night, you might see it coming. Like that train accident that's happened, unfortunately, today. But, it's
just on the 23rd and 24th, wear your hard hat if you go outside.
Exactly, exactly. And look up and live. Isn't that what they say in that Powerline ad? Something like, look up and live, yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOS as well?
Steve Wozniak, there was
the traitor.
I'm down to four cables again, not 14,000.
Go away.
Click here to upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic.
This
all right.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
Just what every nerd has ever dreamed of owning, a walkie-talkie wristwatch.
I thought you were going to say girlfriend.
Oh, Lena! The walkie-talkie...
I noticed you were advertising for a new husband on Twitter during the course of the week too, just quietly.
JD and Turk had walkie-talkie wristwatches in season 5 of Scrubs.
Yeah.
You can buy them
now. It didn't work out well.
Didn't it?
What was that cartoon that we all grew up with Dick Tracy? He had a walkie-talkie wristwatch, didn't he?
This is a real Dick Tracy.
Just for the record, Andrew's a bit older than the rest of us.
Walkie-talkie wristwatch.
Guilty, Your Honour.
Slightly larger than a conventional wristwatch, but not as big as you might think. The face of the watch only measures 7 centimetres by 6 centimetres by 2.5 centimetres, and the antenna can be folded in and out when needed. They come with an AC adapter and an earpiece. You don't have to replace batteries. The walkie-talkie wristwatch shows you the time on a large backlit screen and functions as a real radio. It has 22 channels.
How long does the battery last?
You can... I don't know. Depends how...
What frequency does it run on?
I don't know. You can use the built-in channel scanner to find your wristwatch's counterpart. That's clever. So you can start...
Give one to your girlfriend.
Yeah, if you've got one. They've got voice-operated transmit and an earpiece as well as a push-to-talk button range up to 5 kilometres. Available from www.iwantoneofthose.com for about £50.
50 quid?
50 quid. For a pair. I think it's for a pair of them.
Oh, that's all right.
That's clever, isn't it? That's a gadget,
Andrew. Is it metal? Like, is it a real...
That's a real watch.
It's not a plastic sort of thing. It's a real one.
No, a real walkie-talkie wristwatch.
Okay. Where do you get them? If it's 50 quid, some online shop, I suspect.
www.iwantoneofthose.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
This website was contributed by listener Rocco. And it's
hi, Rocco.
I'll try to make it not too long-winded, and I'll pop it in the show notes. It's telstra.com.au/mobile/networks/feedback.
This is the equivalent of what Lena was talking about before. This is the revert working the other way, where Lena was approached by her telco to say, how are we doing? Have you got dropouts? This is Telstra going the other way, saying, log in here and tell us about your dropouts.
Let us know if we've got a problem with our coverage. Now, this is a website specifically in response to a listener's query last week or the week before, Jack, who said he didn't have any NextG data coverage in his house in Gippsland. He said, now Rocco says, if you don't already know about this, it might be of interest to any Telstra users who have experienced mobile black spots.
I did actually tweet it during the week. I thought it was very good.
It's a good one, isn't it?
I wonder if they respond. Does anyone... I'm sure they would. Someone can tell us.
Let's try it. Telstra says it has several mobile networks, including NextG mobile broadband, available to 99% of Australians. Over the coming years, Telstra will continuously extend and improve mobile coverage, and they want your feedback to help them find network coverage black spots. So if you've got a problem like Jack had last week... let Telstra know about it, and they'll investigate.
That's what I like about this show. Someone always knows. I think it's good.
So, yeah, a bit of a long-winded address there, but I'll pop it in the notes. telstra.com.au/mobile/networks/feedback.cfm.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
The App of the Week is being contributed by... in the chat tonight, Andy B. Andy, that's at least five mentions. You know what to do. The application is... Birdbrain. Now, he's popped an excellent review on the forum. It's a social networking application. He says it's designed specifically for Twitter to help manage your followers and who you follow. Each refresh provides a snapshot of exactly who's followed or unfollowed you, and users can be managed from within the application. A list of users you follow but aren't following back and vice versa make it easy to see who you've forgotten to follow or unfollow even. Basic statistics. Andy's got a review there about what's good, what's not good, and final comments. Although a handy app to have, the $2.99 price tag does seem a bit high, not to say that it's not worth paying for.
You can do this, not wanting to devalue this app or anything like that, but whounfollowedme.com does the same thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think we've had that on the website.
Yeah.
But this does all that and more.
Does it?
Yeah.
Which platform?
Offer good looking providing proper iPad support, says Andy.
So
it might be just an Android-only one.
Oh, Android-only? Okay.
Other platforms, no. No, it's just for... device iPhone. There we go.
So
device iPhone will work on iPad, but not in full screen mode. Requires iOS 3.0 or later.
Okay.
That's our app.
Which cat's that? We don't know.
Birdbrain. Check it out.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bong. Jeremy Bong.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A man in Sydney has been charged with stealing $2.4 million worth of toner cartridges.
Ouch!
What did he do with them?
The 35.
You need a big garage, so wouldn't you?
Well, no, it's only about five or six cartridges. Have you seen?
Which,
nice.
Very funny.
Graham, yes, what can I say?
He's just speechless.
Carry on if you can.
No, there's no need to. The 35-year-old man worked at a Homebush-based company in the city's west. During the alleged thefts between 2005 and September this year, police say about 23,000 printer toner cartridges were stolen.
Ah, this is a bit more, Graham, than you expected.
Yes.
23,000. Do the maths.
Must have been on special.
How much was it? 2.4 million divided by 33. What's that, Graham?
23,000.
Probably $100 a toner cartridge, no?
The year total retail value of the theft. Yeah, we said that. This year alone, it's alleged he stole 5,000 items.
What was he doing with them? Hacking them on eBay?
Selling them. Privately. The man's been granted bail and will appear at the Burwood local court on the 6th of October. Crikey. It's a lot of toner.
Yeah, well, I guess it's black powder as opposed to white powder. I guess it's got to be a little bit more beneficial to the course.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah. All right. That is the show.
The black powder's worth more.
That is. That's Tech Talk Radio. Well done, Bendigo listeners. Well done, Launceston listeners.
Launceston.
That's what it said.
You said Launceston.
I did not.
They don't like that.
I know.
Launceston.
I know. I'm fully aware of that. You told me in no uncertain terms in the green room before we came into the radio station.
Nobody say Launceston, and now look what's happened.
You've done it. I didn't say it. I said Launceston. I'll check the podcast, won't we?
If you've made it this far to the end of the show, you've done extremely well. We do this every week.
You can come back and listen to us at the same time on this radio station.
We have a bit of fun in case you hadn't guessed.
And you can come and get the two-hour version on the podcasty sort of things all on the website. Graham does a sterling job each week. He blames me for everything, but nonetheless, it's all good.
And everything's linked from the website, all the chat rooms and forums and all the rest of the stuff. Yeah. All linked from the website, techtalkradio.com.au.
And if you want, you can come be part of the show at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Like, there's a plethora of people there from all over the place. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming in.
Email newsletters.
Oh, have we? Oh, that's right. You're doing those again, aren't you?
Yeah, but everything. Everything.
Everything. Yeah. We've got to go. Until the same time next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.